Good evening and welcome to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm your host, Bathsheba Monk, and I'm thrilled to have as my guest photographer and videographer Lydia Panis. Lydia is an award-winning photographer whose work has been exhibited internationally and published in such prestigious periodicals as the New York Times Magazine, Photo District News, Popular Photography, the San Francisco Chronicle, and the Wall Street Journal blog. Lydia's work is included in private collections as well as the collections of many art galleries and universities. And those of us living in the Lehigh Valley were lucky enough to see an exhibit of her work at the Allentown Art Museum recently in conjunction with the publication of her first monograph, The Mark of Abel, which, by the way, was named one of the Photo District News Best Photo Books of 2012. Welcome to the Art Salon, Lydia.
Thank you.
I'd like to talk to you tonight about your video project, Imminent Fear, which is opening, which has opened, you said already, at the Soft Machine Gallery in Allentown.
Yeah.
Is Imminent Fear your first video project?
It is.
It is. And so how did that come about? What made you decide to do video?
You know, I mean, I've been a still photographer for about 25 years or so, and I think this was just something I wanted to try. I actually did the project. I did the interviews and thought about the project in 2004, mm-hmm. and did a whole series of interviews. I think I wanted to sort of see what happened when I talked to people rather than just sort of like, you know, when I actually let them kind of talk back.
Right. So this is about fear, and what made you decide on that subject instead of like what I want for Christmas?
It was a topic that interested me. Mm-hmm. I mean, in 2004 was right around the time when I started thinking about my own fears and what my own fears were doing for me. Mm-hmm. I thought that fear was a very sort of basic concept. Fear could both motivate you and, I think, diminish you in some ways. Like, it could be a diminishing factor. It could also be a motivating factor. And I started thinking about it in terms of my own life. And
In 2004, there was a lot of fear going around.
Yeah. It was also the Kerry Bush election when the red alerts and the green alerts and the color alerts were going on during the election, and we were supposed to know how afraid from day to day we were supposed to be about terrorism.
Right, the Amber. I remember that, right?
And so I suppose that was part of it, too, yeah, that I was thinking about fear as a political climate, and then how that sort of your personal sort of identity and your personal sort of sense of fear intersects with, you know, perhaps what your politics are, too.
Oh, I see. That's great. So I see in your questions that you had a list of 19 questions that you asked each of the about 50 participants, including, do you fear death? Do you fear aging? I notice you don't have a question in there about fear of public speaking, which is, I think, the biggest fear that people have. But anyway, how did you arrive at that particular list?
It was really organic. I sat down and I thought to myself, what could I ask these people? What do I care about? And they were my questions.
They were your questions.
They were the questions I wanted to know about myself. And then I thought, well, if I think about this, these are things I was sort of afraid of.
So did you ask yourself these questions?
Yeah.
Oh, you did? Did you film yourself?
I didn't so much literally ask these questions, but I thought about these questions. And I feel like I think about them a lot. You know, For instance, death. I mean, I think about that. It scares me, you know. I always wonder how other people deal with that. Like, do they just not think about it at all, or do they worry about it? I mean, I remember as a child worrying about that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I think it never left me in a way. Probably the most relevant at the time were if fear stopped me from doing things, you know. I found those questions. One of the questions is, does it stop you from doing things? Does it stop you from moving forward with your life? Can it motivate you? Because I found that fear for me at the time was something that had absolutely stopped me from doing some things.
Yes.
And had also been a motivating factor. And like you said, public speaking. I mean, public speaking for me was a terrifying thought. When I was in high school, I remember we used to have to public speak, and I would be petrified ever of having to do it, which is kind of interesting because That's why I got into teaching, sort of helped me with that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it really did help a lot. I mean, slowly, you know, it's kind of gotten magnified. I now do a fair amount of public speaking, but it's such a great feeling to know that I was absolutely panicked my entire life
that.
About
yeah.
public speaking.
Well, these questions that you have, they're very specific. You know, death, aging, conflict, nothingness. There's a big one. Doubt, peace. Do you fear peace? And at the end, though, you have, what do you fear? That's sort of open-ended. Did people give you stuff you didn't expect?
You know, the way I built the question, I sort of built them in a way. I kind of ordered them in a very specific way, and everybody mm-hmm. got them in the same order. Because they might be specific, like, does it motivate you? But I think that they're sort of both specific and open-ended, because everybody answered everyone very differently.
Very differently, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of the way I do my assignments in class, too, when I teach. I teach photography, and I give them very, they're specific questions, but mm-hmm. assignments, but you're able to answer them in a very, very open-ended way. And I felt like that was what this did. For instance, do you fear conflict? I mean, some people didn't even know what I was talking about, and then other people would get really, really into it, and in all different degrees of depth and complexity. But what I was really trying to do was sort of go around and ask, sort of warm people up, so that by the last question, by the time we sat there for about, you know, half an hour or 40 minutes, they were open to what do you fear? Because that ultimately is, it's a pretty, pretty difficult question. You really have to think about that.
Right. You know. Well, in a way, too, just by the fact that you ask the question, you sort of loaded the dice. Did anybody beg the question and say, I'm fearless, I'm not scared of anything?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. There were people. I had people who said, you know, who gave me complicated, thoughtful, really interesting answers. I had people who were not afraid of anything, supposedly.
Were they young or old? I would think that being really?
Yeah. Truthfully, what I found to be the most interesting part of these answers was that on some level, everyone was sort of fearful of fairly similar things. So it wasn't. I wasn't really so much interested about what they were afraid of as how they answered the questions. That was much more interesting to me. And so when you see the video, like one of the things that you notice is how in depth somebody goes, how self-aware somebody is when they answer the questions.
What do you mean by that? Like how?
Well, there were people who were like, "Well, no, I'm not really afraid of anything." You know, I mean, I am afraid of roller coasters, but that's about it. And I mean, I kind of personally have a hard time believing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
that's the only thing. Not even spiders. Come on, right?
I did hear spiders. I heard birds. Somebody was afraid of birds. He said he was afraid to look birds in the eye.
Well, I can see that. Okay. Well, he said, now I noticed that some of these people were abroad and some were mm-hmm. Americans. Did you notice any difference geographically, like where you were from would determine what you were afraid of?
Oh, that's interesting. No, not really. People who were from like the Eastern Bloc, mm-hmm. they had a tendency to be really afraid of I think they had been sort of sequestered on some level, you know, politically. And so they were all kind of very, very, actually not even so much afraid, but motivated to kind of get out of that sort of way. So I suppose what I saw more was a different kind of politics than fears. Now, fears, I found people were just very individual, and some people were really interested in talking about it. Other people just didn't want to go there.
Did any of the answers that you get surprise you? Or was it pretty much what you expected?
I mean, did they surprise me? I suppose they touched me more than surprised
me. They touched you, yeah.
There was a lot. I was touched by a lot of people. I was touched by how honest people. I mean, most people were at least trying to be honest, you know, and I was touched by the honesty. I was also touched by the fact that these people would be willing to do this for me. I mean, it was 50 people I asked. I mean, that I interviewed. I must have asked at least 100 people, and I'd say at least 50 of them said no.
Oh, really? Why did they say no? That's interesting.
Oh, you know, I don't want to be in front of a video camera.
So fear of video is...
Yeah, fear of being exposed, fear of talking in front of a video camera. Some people just didn't like the way they looked on film. Some people were just like, just no.
Just no.
Just no.
Just go away, Lydia.
I did a couple, and the husband was like, yeah, I'll do it. And the wife sat in on the interview, and she said, there's no way I'll do this. You know, like, there's no way I'll do this.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So it didn't answer me. It didn't tell me why. You know, I didn't press. I mean, I mean, I would maybe be afraid to do this myself.
Right. This is Bathsheba Monk talking to Lydia Panis on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater on Bethlehem South Side presenting Christmas City Follies 13, directed by J.P. Jordan, created and performed by the Touchstone Ensemble. This annual classic, yet again, reimagines what the holidays are all about with music, wit, and holiday hijinks. November 29th to December 22nd. For tickets or information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
For program support on WDIY, we thank the Bethlehem Historic District Association presenting their 2012 Holiday House Tour event on December 8th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. This year's tour will feature professionally decorated houses, Heckenwalder Place, the Hotel Bethlehem, and Salem Lutheran Church. Tickets are available online at artsquest.com or in person at the Moravian Bookstore or the Bethlehem Visitor Center on Main Street.
This is Bathsheba Monk talking to Lydia Panis on Lehigh Valley Art Salon. We're talking about her recent video installation, Imminent Fear. Lydia, you had a great quote that you were just showing me here on break from George O'Keefe. Would you like to read it to us?
Yeah, somebody just posted this on Facebook the other day. I thought it was really great. This is by George O'Keefe. She said, "I've been absolutely terrified every moment of my life, and I've never let it keep me from doing a single thing I wanted to do." And I just wrote it down. I wanted to bring it here because I realized this is part of why I did this, is that I've always been afraid of a lot of things. You know, fear has been a part of my life. And doing this video was part of looking into my own fears. And, you know, while I looked into my own, I also thought it would be kind of interesting to see what other people were afraid of. And I think listening to them speak really showed me how much similarity there is between people. Like even though specific fears may have been sort of different, overall, it seemed to me the overarching idea was that we are all kind of afraid of the same thing. You know, we all want to not be afraid to do the things we want to do. You know, we're all sort of afraid of not doing as much as we can do, of not living up to our potential. Those things, you know, and we're all sort of afraid that, you know, maybe we won't be loved. That seemed to be...
Oh, that's a big one.
Seemed to be something I heard a lot. You know?
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the difference between video and photography just as a process. To me, it seems like there's a profound difference between video and photography in that in a photograph, you kind of capture a subject en route, either coming or going from someplace, and there's a little more left to the imagination of the viewer about what's going on. But in the video, whether it's true or not, you actually see the subject changing. Would you agree with that, first of all, or what was different about doing a video as opposed to a photo shoot?
I think I kind of would agree with that. I mean, I am mostly a still photographer, so I'm going to kind of defend photography a little bit. But I do have to agree with you as a viewer looking at video, especially this kind of a video that's not very cryptic. I mean, it's really a very open project. I imagine the viewer can relate in a very different way, in a way that's much fuller, because the model or the subject is coming back at you and really giving you their thought process. Whereas in still photography, you know, it's while you're capturing the subject's thought process, I think, it's a lot of your own, too. But as a photographer, as the artist, I didn't see much of a difference.
Like, oh, you did not?
No, as a process. Like, I understand that visually, like, from the viewer's point of view, it may seem very different. From an artistic point of view, I feel like I sort of do the very same thing, which is why, I mean, I did this project in 2004, 2005. It's now 2012. I'm still really, I would love to do another video project, but I haven't come up with the project that will do what this one did. You know, I haven't come up with the thought, you know, like an interesting sort of idea yet.
Right.
But for me, it's very much...
Very similar. Mm. It seemed to me when I look at your still photographs, which are beautiful and gorgeous, that I get the sense that you're waiting for the subject to come to you. And whether that's true or not, is that what you did with the video? You kind of waited for them to come up with their answers?
I did. I'm very patient in both processes. I'm really patient, and I look, and I allow them a lot of space. I think it's interesting you say that in my still photography, I'm waiting for them to come to me. I do. Mm-hmm. I do. I wait for their spirit, in a way, in a sense, their sense of themselves to come forward, and that's what I'm looking for.
And to show themselves.
And yeah. Then, yeah. And I think that's what I did in the video, too.
When I look at these as video portraits, in a way, because they're head-on shots, they're just full-frame heads, and they're talking, and... They're talking about themselves, and as somebody, I used to paint, and I used to do portraiture, and I know that people always had a problem with how they looked, how they came across, and so I would always get payment up front, by the way. So I wondered.
It's an idea.
So I wondered if you had any of that, any of those issues, like people saw the finished product, and they said, that's not me, that's not what I was saying.
It gets more complicated with photography, because they can't say it's not them, it looks like them. But yeah, you know, for me, a portrait is very, when I make a photographic portrait, again, I don't do it for pay, you know, I do it, it's not a commission, it's, I ask somebody, and so I ask someone who I think I can probably pull something from them. It's usually somebody I relate to on some level, there's something about them I see that I understand, and when this photographic setting is, or sitting is happening, it's like it's sort of half them and half me, and it's like where their personality and my personality mesh. You know, it's like where I understand something about them that's also something about me. That's when I click the shutter. So it's this very organic process that's not them and it's not me. It's kind of, well, it's me too, but it's kind of a combination. And do they ever see it and go, whoa, why did you do that?
Yeah.
Sure.
Sure, okay.
Sure. That's the short answer.
Okay. Because in editing too, you said these interviews were 30 minutes long and you edited them down to 10 minutes. So just by leaving out certain things and choosing to put in other things, you've already said this is this person.
And I think what I've also said is, this is me. I mean, it's interesting because I suppose it comes across as, this is this person. But what I'm really saying is, this is what I need to say. You know, as my art piece, this piece says what I need it to say.
Right.
So it's not like I'm influencing them, and I'm certainly not, you know, changing anything they've said. But you can't help it in an edit but make it yours.
Right, it is you, I would think.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, you had an idea when you went into this, what you wanted to convey. Did your idea of what that was change in the process of doing this?
I didn't really have an idea of what they would say. I had an idea that it'd be really interesting to listen to people, to how people speak about their fears. So
how they did rather than what?
Yeah. I'm not sure originally. Originally, it might have been what, but I think it transformed itself into how. It ended up for me being much more, because really they repeated. I mean, I heard a lot of the same fears. But what was fascinating was how, like how they spoke about what they were afraid of. Mm-hmm. That I personally find that to be more interesting because, you know.
Did you see their faces change and their...
Yeah, the way they sat, the way they, how they opened up, the way they trusted me. I mean, there was a lot of trust in that project, well, as well as in my photographic projects. I mean, it's all about trust. And so this work, along with my photographic work, becomes all about connections and trust and how we relate to each other. It's part of this whole issue that I'm interested in, which is connecting, really.
Connecting.
How do people connect, and when can you connect on a level that's really really real. You know, that you feel something about it afterwards.
The video installation, and I saw a part of it. You have four monitors that are running simultaneously, each head talking about their fears, as opposed to just one monitor. So, why did you choose that? Were you after a certain effect, or?
Yeah, what happens is when you go into a gallery, the monitors are on different, almost like four different corners, you know, so they're far away from each other. And so when you walk into a room, what you see is like a plain blank room, and right now it's at the Soft Machine Gallery, where they have this beautiful new gallery. You walk into a room and if you look around and it's sparse and large and there are four heads, and you basically choose a head. You look at, you just decide which head. It could be male, it could be female, it could be old, it could be young, whatever. You know, they could be foreign, they could be whatever, and different colors. And you just, on your own, you decide, you pick one head to gravitate towards. And you can listen to that head for as long as you want. And basically each monitor has 12 interviews. So you can sit and listen to all 12, but that'll take a while. Or right. You probably won't.
And most people don't do that.
No. But then you can sort of say, okay, this is interesting. Now I'm going to go, and you look around, and now you see another head, and you go, I think I'll pick that one. So you have some choice in the matter. And I think the other thing that was really, I thought, interesting for me was that all four people are simultaneously talking about what they're afraid of. It's this, like, there's this interesting connection about how we all have these fears. I felt like it's a little bit like when you walk into one of my gallery exhibitions and the photographs are kind of talking with each other, kind of.
Right.
Something like that.
So there's
like
a connection between them, too, as well.
Yeah.
And what they're, yeah, that's interesting. So was four the magic number? Or, I mean, why not 54?
I think it had actually more to do with how long each DVD can take, how many interviews a DVD can take.
Okay, so it's logistics more than anything. Okay.
But I think it works really well. I'm really committed to it.
Okay. All right, so where can now the question is, where can we see this exhibit?
Yeah, it is. It just opened up on Friday night, November 16th, and it will go through January 5th at the Soft Machine Gallery in Allentown. It's 101 Ridge Avenue in Allentown. It's a gallery of this married couple, Eva DiOrio and John Mortensen, just opened up the space about a year ago, but they just moved into this new space.
So it's a soft gallery.
Soft Machine.
Soft Machine.
It's a gallery that's committed to doing, you know, pretty avant-garde stuff.
Great.
They're taking chances. These are good kids.
This is wonderful for Allentown. And so if people want to know more about you or the Mark of Abel, where can they find out about that?
Oh, you can go on my website at www.lydiapanis.com.
Great. It was a pleasure talking to you, Lydia.
Thank you, Bathsheba.
Okay. This is Bathsheba Monk talking to Lydia Panis for Lehigh Valley Art Salon. Good night.